Dietz and Watson's been making meats and cheeses the right way since forever. What's that mean? It means never cutting corners, ever. It means cooking, not processing. It means our Virginia brand ham that's cooked to perfection, then twice baked to layer the flavors. It takes more time, but you can taste the difference. We come to work every day to do it the right way, even if it's the hard way. Because if it's not right for us, it's not right for you. Dietz and Watson, it's a family thing since 1939.
For the ones who work hard to ensure their crew can always go the extra mile, and the ones who get in early so everyone can go home on time, there's Grainger, offering professional-grade supplies backed by product experts so you can quickly and easily find what you need. Plus, you can count on access to a committed team ready to go the extra mile for you. Call, click Grainger.com, or just stop by. Grainger, for the ones who get it done.
Hello, world, and welcome back to week 7 of NBC Sports Edge's DFS Building Block Show. As always, I'm your host, John Daigle, joined by friend in life, Kyle Dvorak. We always like to start the beginning of the show with a little bit of a weekly recap, hopefully learn some lessons along the way. So, Kyle, I know in particular you had something you wanted to talk about, not about last week, but about the miserable Thursday night game between the Browns and Broncos.
Yeah, I literally texted you beforehand because, like, we don't talk before the show. We don't, like, pre-discuss topics. Right. We have the general, like, the top stack, the fade, that type of stuff. But we don't pre-discuss anything before the show on what we're going to talk about because we want this to be a natural, free-flowing conversation. Mm-hmm. But I literally, for the first time this year, after 7 weeks, texted you and said, hey, there's this tweet. And the tweet was just a good way to get at the general idea of where our edge comes from that I wanted to talk about. Because I didn't want to blindside you with some random showdown nonsense. But the idea was that on the Thursday slate, in my opinion, the edge in the Thursday slate showdown was so minimal because the pricing was so bad that, like, everyone could build a good lineup. It was so obvious on how you wanted to build a good lineup. Mm-hmm. And I wanted to get your thoughts on that because on the Thursday slate, but I think the reason I wouldn't have brought this up if I didn't think it was applicable to our audience, because I think with how obvious the spots are this week, I think the edge might actually be thinner. And I thought it perfectly related to the Thursday slate where D'Ernest Johnson and Demetric Felton super cheap spots were so obvious that you were never going to build the best projected lineup that you could without it being duped 100, 500, 1,000 times in the Millie Maker. And it ended up being that the Millie Maker, the contest on DraftKings that pays out $1 million to first paid out, I think it was $8,000. You could correct me if I'm wrong, but I think it paid out $8,000 and changed to first. You built the best possible lineup and you made $8,000. And this week, obviously, it's a main slate, so it's not going to be the exact same thing. But I do think this would be a slate to me that unless you convince me that there are really good leverage spots, that honestly, I think ownership kind of reflects well on what spots project well. And I would, if anything, if there were a week in the first 7 weeks to scale back your volume, it kind of would be to me this week in that, yeah, there are very obvious spots. Patrick Mahomes in a game with a 57.5 point total, I think the last time I checked, he's going to be popular and he deserves to be popular. So I thought the showdown slate was a perfect allegory for this slate, the whole, you know, week 7 main slate, in that if ownership projects to be efficient, those are spots where you should probably scale back your volume because your edge is minimized. In the Thursday slate, it was because you could not build good lineups that were not duped. In this main slate, I think it's because the chalk is probably the more accurate chalk than we've had in the past 3 or 4 weeks.
I will tell you, as an interesting slate last night, what I did after listening to the pregame show, because I was trying to see inactives, like who was going to play for both defenses more than anything on both sides of the ball. And Glazer had a report that Teddy Bridgewater had his calf drained overnight, and they were genuinely worried about him playing the entire game, knowing they couldn't drain his calf after every quarter. And so what I did actually...
That's disgusting. That's also, to be clear, that is very gross.
It's the way it works. I mean, we've also seen players get their shoulders pop back into place, their fingers just broken and wrapped and thrown back on the field. I do not have the testosterone to be a football player.
Hell no.
Nonetheless, what I did then with that report was take all my action down and then only jumped into the Millie because, as you said, every slate's different. And we have to remember that we are building our lineup according to the payout, according to the field size. So correct. That way we know how contrarian we really need to be. The Millie maker, not only do you need to be the contrarian, you need to hit every single square. You can't get by with the free space on the bingo card. Even the middle of the bingo card has a number in it. You have to get right. And so took all my action down. I only played the Millie and like recreational low stakes tournaments with large fields and large payouts. And I played Drew Lock. And like I took down all my high stakes action knowing I couldn't get by with Drew Lock. And that's the way I was going to play that dumb slate. So again, that's the way I attacked it. And it was just, and I didn't win anything, by the way, but I think it was fun just in knowing it was a different slate. And that's what this is too, in my opinion. It's just there are different ways to attack it. And maybe, like you said, we need to take down some of our action knowing that it is tougher. But I think there are going to be key leverage points we'll talk about along the way here. Were you one of them that split the 8K, by the way?
No, I didn't split the 8K. I would not. My lineups, I didn't play the Millie because I didn't think there was a big edge in the Millie because it was so easy to build the best projected lineups. And those projected lineups were most likely to win. So no, I didn't play the Millie. It's pretty rare that I play the Millie because I don't think my strategy is best at building literally lineups that are not duped by anyone. And this was a slate where you did not want, like the projection said, the lineups that are best, the 8,000th best lineup was still going to be duped. So I didn't think it was a good slate to play because I thought the best lineups and the 10th best lineup, the 100th, the 1,000th best lineup were all going to be highly duped because it was easy to build highly projected lineups. So no, I didn't play the Millie. I played some contests that overlaid for tickets to like the 3,300 sure. type of lineups. And, I had a good sweat in there, but at the end it didn't cash because I probably still played, I don't want to say too contrarian, but when you play contrarian, you'll lose a lot of the time. And that's how I played.
Also from last week, I will say that this is what makes this week interesting as well, because you already mentioned Patrick Mahomes at the top. We'll get to that game, of course, because everyone wants to get to that game. But it is after a week he failed. And it's funny to say he failed when he threw for 400 yards and 2 touchdowns, but that wasn't in the optimal. It didn't get there. Go Sixers go, because of course, and mid stakes and high stakes on FanDuel, for instance, took down tournaments with Dak and CeeDee Lamb as the contrarian option we talked about last week. I didn't have him in much of lineups, but that's the way to get there. Ran back Jacoby Myers and then had the low roster running back that got lost in the shuffle in Devontae Booker. That's the one, not Daryl Henderson, who was lost along the way, more so than Khalil Herbert and everyone else, even Daryl Williams. So the fact that even though Devontae Booker's final line was not as good as Daryl Williams, who spiked a touchdown or so, and the other, and Khalil Herbert, of course, who had 97 yards also in every single backfield touch, it's just the fact that that's the one that got lost. And so that's the way to play it. And he ran back that, of course, with a double stack of the Rams without Matthew Stafford. So he did have Daryl Henderson and Cooper Kupp getting the touchdown equity. That also rings a bell and is significant for this slate because it seems like something we're probably going to have to do. There are 4 30-plus point team totals on this board. And so one of the offenses, I believe, one of the games, one of the offenses is going to get lost in the mix. With that, though, I want to hear what your decision point of the week has been as you've been building lineups, knowing all the projections that it's the same players everyone likes. How are you handling your lineups to get an edge right now?
Yeah, the decision point, as we call it, is how to play the Chiefs game. The Chiefs game is not only the highest total of the week. Last I checked was at 57.5. And honestly, like if you were betting the over on 57.5, I don't blame you. 57.5 is a crazy number. We have not, I believe, seen that this year. We may not see it again this year. And I still don't blame you because it's two of the worst defenses in the league. The Chiefs, literally the worst defense by most metrics, like EPA per rush play against them, yards per pass attempts against them, sacks generated by that team. You cannot find a metric that doesn't say the Chiefs are a terrible defense. And of course, we know both offenses should be absolutely insane. It's how do you want to attack this game, or do you want to attack this game? Because it's going to be chalk. Like the thing is, I thought at the beginning of the week, I was like, oh, AJ Brown flopped last week. And even going into now, we're at Friday, Julio Jones kind of looks like he might play. He's been practicing, which I thought was actually a little surprising. I still don't think it's going to be enough to get AJ Brown ownership actually down to a reasonable amount. It really is. When we have a week where Alexander Mattison is the chalk running back, this game feels like the chalk running back of the entire week. We're triple stacking this game. Quarterback, wide receiver, opposing wide receiver. Feels like the chalk way to approach the entire slate. So for me, the entire crux of the slate comes down to how do you play the obvious absolute smash spot that is the Kansas City Chiefs versus Tennessee Titans.
And if you're looking on the screen, watching the show live right now, I'm going through our projections at the DFS toolkit on NBCSportsEdge.com and sorting them by points just for this game. As you can see, we have five receivers in this game alone, or six receivers, actually. Nope, seven. I'm looking. I'm just going to go double digits. How about that? Seven receivers in this game alone, including some third string options that could actually get there and score double digit points if you're looking down at cheap options. Of course, Travis Kelce as one of the primary, if not the highest scoring tight end on the entire slate. The big dog, of course, coming in well over median projections. Even his player prop across books is around 146 and a half total rushing and receiving yards. And I understand it's sharp to bet under that. I could not pull the trigger, though, even in such an outrageous number, because it's the absolute nut spot for him. And then, of course, both Patrick Mahomes and Ryan Tannehill make sense to exceed their salaries on DraftKings and FanDuel. So overall, it is just an amazing spot. And I will tell you, while building lineups this week, I have gone back and forth. But I will say my one keynote for everyone is that if you dabble with Ryan Tannehill, remember, you have to ask yourself, how do I win if I win? And that is double stacking them. If you get there with Ryan Tannehill, you want two receivers to get there with 100 yards and a touchdown and the bonus. So I am not playing Tannehill single stacked. I am playing Tannehill double stacked every single place, knowing that it's already far-fetched for him to get there. So if he does, like, I need to make sure I'm at the top of lineups if he does.
Yeah, I love that because, this is such a strange comparison. The first thing I thought of when I looked at Ryan Tannehill's rushing numbers was Kyler Murray this year. And you would say Kyler Murray, oh, of course, you don't have to double stack Kyler Murray. He's a rushing threat. I don't believe, I know until last week at least, Kyler Murray hadn't topped 30 rushing yards in a single game. And that's how Tannehill reminds me throughout his career. Kyler Murray is kind of weird this year. Tannehill is that throughout his career. Sure, you get one rushing touchdown and you're excited. But one rushing touchdown is not enough from Tannehill. You need one rushing touchdown and two plus, at worst, passing touchdowns. And because of that, unless you project them to both go to the same receiver, you do need to double stack him. And so far, because I think across the industry, fantasy sites have not priced down Ryan Tannehill to the point that he's played, which he's played because obviously Derrick Henry is scoring. I mean, he has 10 rushing touchdowns, I believe, which is just, I mean, Derrick Henry is just going absolutely nuts.
He is the final boss right now.
He is the final boss of all final bosses. He isn't the final boss of the 2021 season. He's the final boss of like the 2000s, right? He has become one of the best fantasy players, I don't know, ever. But because of that, Ryan Tannehill has not scored a ton of points, yet he is still not priced down. And because when you look at, say, his price on DraftKings, which is 6,400, despite him not scoring a ton of fantasy points per game, he's easily scoring below 20 fantasy points per game on DraftKings. You still need him at that price to put up 30 probably points on a slate with a ton of quarterbacks who could absolutely go off. Stafford is projected to absolutely obliterate the Lions. You need him to outscore those quarterbacks. And because of that, you need him to score 30 points. His avenue to scoring 30 points involves him throwing, I would argue, three passing touchdowns and 300 yards. So I love the idea of double stacking him. I think there are probably four players you could double stack him with. It's the tight end, Anthony Firkser, and then assuming Julio Jones and AJ Brown play, those two. And then I guess Nick Akeneye Westbrook. They seem to also like, I mean, Ryan Tannehill actually talked about it earlier this week. They like Nick Akeneye Westbrook's ability to play multiple positions at wide receiver, play slot, play outside. You could arguably play him, but I do think I would limit myself to Julio Jones, AJ Brown, a lot of AJ Brown, and Anthony Firkser.
Well, even you say a lot of AJ Brown, that means Julio Jones is the one flying under the radar, right? That's kind of right. I've been leaning on because it's ugly. And I understand AJ Brown has led the team in target share when he's been healthy in three full games this year. But overall, it seems like Julio Jones is the one that's going to get lost.
Yep.
Same for the other side of the ball. I think Darrell Williams is going to get lost. And he's, you know, we could say whatever we want about his talent, but what we do know is that he's the starting running back who handled 24 of 28 backfield touches in his interim start last week for CEH on a team total that has only increased, sitting at 31 and a half points right now across books, wherever you're looking. And so if you just tell me like, okay, maybe we can luck box our way into a couple bunny touchdowns inside the 1 yard line as they give him the ball to get more physical, like that's something I could easily get behind because then I also have more room to spend up elsewhere. So I've been looking at Daryl Williams a lot. I've been trying to plan out how to attack the Chiefs, especially now that Travis Kelce removed from the injury report altogether on Friday. That's fairly significant. Even Tyreek Hill and running the third most routes among their receivers last week, banged up, still led the team with 12 targets. Didn't even matter that he deflected a pass into the defender's hand for the second time this year. He's still Tyreek Hill. And so I'm trying to figure it out. I also came in thinking that maybe not overlooked, that's not the right word, but maybe people stay away from it a little bit, knowing that even in being successful, that the Chiefs offense, the Chiefs stacks still flopped last week with Patrick Mahomes. So maybe that gets people thinking differently and saying, well, if Patrick Mahomes had 400 yards and 2 touchdowns and didn't get there, well, not in the optimals, maybe I can avoid him this week, which also gets me higher on Patrick Mahomes. Derrick Henry also, to your point, it's an interesting conversation because 11K on FanDuel is obscene, but it is so obscene that everyone thinks it's obscene. And thus, if everyone is not going to play him because it's obscene, maybe I get to play Derrick Henry for 11K. So there are lots of interesting things like that I've been thinking about. Also, that's the way because to pay up for Derrick Henry on both sides, let's go back to DraftKings now. The way people are going to do it is with cheap receivers. And so this is my head anyways. So like if I'm now going to get Marquise Brown and or Brandon Cooks at lower roster numbers because everyone wants to play Rashad Bateman or Nico Collins as like run backs, then okay, that's great because I would love to play Marquise Brown and Brandon Cooks in that middle range. So it's just little things like that I've been trying to figure out, but overall definitely won't be fading this game. We got away with it in Washington. If you went that route, J.D. McKissick did well. We talked about him last week in that game script. I didn't do so well just because I did overplay Chiefs Washington. Washington did not hold up their end of the bargain. But overall, like, yes, I will be going overweight again on this game. It's just a matter, we've talked about all the angles, just a matter of how we want to do it again.
Yeah, I really like a handful of those calls. Specifically, like last week you talked about J.D. McKissick, and I was like not super interested, but the more you think about it, the more you realize that in any given scenario, obviously we're talking about this week moving forward, but in every given scenario, that if Washington is going to get blown out by the Chiefs, who is the running back you expect to do the best? And it would be J.D. McKissick, who ended up, I believe, having over 100 yards from scrimmage. So I had some J.D. McKissick, but it was really that the game just didn't hit 50 points. And if the game doesn't hit, you know, 50, 55, 60 points, and you're paying up for your, you're paying up for your Travis Kelce, Tyreek Hill, Patrick Mahomes stacks, and your team scores, I don't know, 30 some points, it's not enough. You need them to absolutely go nuts. I would say one other spot, and I think I'm not sure how people are going to view this yet, but it would be the LA Rams versus the Lions. The LA Rams have a 33.5 implied team total. They are 16-point implied, or they're 16-point favorites with that 33.5 implied team total. Highest implied team total of the slate. I think the Chiefs, Tannehill, you know, the Chiefs versus Ryan Tannehill in the passing game is going to be the chalkiest sort of stack. I think the chalk stack of the week will be Patrick Mahomes plus one of Travis Kelce or Tyreek Hill plus Mecole Hardman plus either Derrick Henry or AJ Brown, one of those two. And I think because of that, some of the other very high implied team total, but not, you know, the crazy game of the week teams are going to be, I don't want to say very underlooked, but they will be underlooked. For me, it starts with the Rams versus the Lions. I also think Aaron Rodgers and the Packers with a team total that is slightly dipping now. I think it's down 2 points versus where it opened, but it's still the fourth or fifth highest implied team total at 27.75. I think the sort of pocket passer, Matthew Stafford, Aaron Rodgers, when their targets are so obvious, are maybe the leverage point of the entire slate off of Patrick Mahomes. You play the Daryl Williams because if Daryl Williams scores 2 touchdowns, as you said, he saw 24 of the team's 28 running back touches. 24 touches is more than Clyde Edwards-Helaire has seen on the entire week or in the entire week, the entire season. Because as we've seen with Alexander Mattison, when the discrepancy between the first running back and the second running back is big, but it's not, you know, completely indescribable. And the second running back versus the third running back for Alexander Mattison, it was him versus at times Amir Abdullah, who is essentially just a kick returner, is completely a gulf. When the second running back becomes the starter, he projects better than the starting running back did. And I think we're seeing that with Darrell Williams versus Clyde Edwards-Helaire. So I love that Darrell Williams, tons of touches and a high total call, use him versus AJ Brown, Anthony Firkser, or whatever you want, and maybe then stack potentially Matthew Stafford and Cooper Kupp and even Robert Woods, because his price continues coming down, or Tyler Higbee, who's playing all the snaps now that Johnny Munt is now injured. Or on the other side, you know, maybe, or on the other game, Aaron Rodgers, Davante Adams, and I'm not sure who you stack for the third player, but I really like where you were leaning with the Darrell Williams call and then stacking one of the other high implied team total sort of pocket passer type quarterbacks. For me, Aaron Rodgers, Matthew Stafford are those two guys.
I do worry about the pace in the overall game, but I don't worry about Davante Adams at all. That's why I love Davante Adams this week. On DraftKings, like Ricky Seals-Jones, considering the past 2 weeks, he's played 141 of 142 snaps for Washington. The price didn't increase enough. 3,700 does not reflect his usage. And thus, remember, we can just go overboard and get contrarian around him. Even though the price doesn't reflect his usage, at the same time, though, Tyler Higbee, Dallas Goedert, Mike Gesicki, like, are only 1K or less more expensive. And so, like, if Ricky Seals-Jones, I need to see what percentage he's going to come in at, because then I don't mind getting away from him knowing I can only spend like 600 more and get to other players I'm very confident in and high team totals. You mentioned the Rams game, though, and that's actually kind of my decision point, because I do think one of these games is going to get lost in the mix. Which 30-plus point team total are we most confident in fading? And that's kind of what I've been thinking about all week, or most confident in going over the field. And I guess if I had to guess right now, I would think the Cardinals get lost just because people think, and they're probably right, but people assume they're going to absolutely wipe the floor with the Texans and thus bench their starters. But whether that comes true or not, we could still, if it does come true, play James Conner, who, you know, this year has six carries inside the five compared to just one for Chase Edmonds. We know that inside the 20s, love. We talked about this in the preview show for Chase Edmonds. He's just not going to play there. So James Conner's a really solid play. Also double digit touches in five of his six games. Or again, if we think for whatever reason, I don't think so, but you know, the way we do this in the betting circles also is we look ahead and it's like, oh, the Cardinals play a big game against the Packers on Thursday night. Like, what if they're just looking ahead and maybe the Texans hover around for a little bit? Then we can play like Brandon Cooks and get on Kyler Murray, because again, like the past couple of weeks, like Kyler Murray's absolutely going to come in under roster compared to everyone else. And he's this year, 17 of his touchdowns, 14 have come through the air. Last week at 2%, 2 to 5%, depending on your field, he threw four touchdowns. I mean, he's just getting it done every single week. So it seems like a good spot to be overweight in that with the Cardinals and with that team, unless you think it's going to be another team. I know you mentioned the Rams as well.
Yeah, that's I was really looking forward to just kind of playing James Conner, who I believe outcarried Chase Edmonds last week, 16-4. Chase Edmonds, when his team is winning, is not going to see carries because he's like 5'9 and 180 some odd pounds. Why would you, when you're up by 21 to the Browns, pound Chase Edmonds into the back of your lineman? You would just play James Conner. And then at the end, in the fourth quarter, you'd actually play Jonathan Ward, who they saw like four carries or whatever. But you are absolutely right that I do believe if you look at all of the sort of high total shootout spot or at least high scoring spot games, if I would rank them, I would say Kansas City, obviously first. I think Kansas City is going to be the most popular team to stack. Then probably the Rams and maybe the Bucks, now that the Bucks without Antonio Brown, without Rob Gronkowski, are kind of an easier team to stack. You don't have to play that guessing game. That to me leaves Kyler Murray at best as the fourth most owned quarterback. And if you factor in, you know, some value plays, some like Jalen Hurts is a good value in a spot, he looks more like at best fourth, probably fourth, fifth, sixth type of guy, not nearly as owned as Patrick Mahomes. But like, I can't argue with Vegas telling me that at a 32.25 implied team total, they're really the one of four teams that holds a candle to the Los Angeles Rams at 33.5. And of those teams, he is the only quarterback who projects to be outside the top five in ownership or has a chance at being. Like, Patrick Mahomes is never coming outside the top three in ownership. So I actually think that the really contrarian Kyler Murray stack, I wanted to just come on here and tell you, like, James Conner, 20 carries, 3 touchdowns, and bank it.
Which is fine. Which is fine. Like, that is a way to play this game for sure.
But I think your Kyler Murray stack makes a pretty considerable amount of out of sense. My only question is, who do you play him with? Because DeAndre Hopkins, as of the, you know, as of 6 games so far, has, I believe, a 21% target share. That is his worst target share since 2015, and it's not even close. It's 5 or 6% beyond his 26% target share of 2016 or something. In the past 3 years, it's been 28, 29, and 30. You know, he is a dominant alpha until this year, and now this year, plus the acquisition of Zach Ertz, which we have yet to be seen, he's been kind of just a blasé kind of number 1A to 1B type of receiver. And I think that is my only concern, is when I play Kyler Murray, who am I stacking with? Do you have any strong lean on who you stack him with? Because the implied team total is so good that you do want Kyler Murray exposure at his top 6 or 7 quarterback ownership. I just don't know how I'm stacking him.
And that's the issue, right? Even in getting there last week with 2 touchdowns for DeAndre Hopkins, still just 4 targets is certainly concerning. But that would be the one place I go. I don't think I'd even double stack them. I may not even run them back. I think they just run it up, and maybe they just keep it that way, and then you lean on James Conner. So maybe they're all good plays. But I think that is the only place I could get, really, would be Hopkins, knowing that Ertz is also entering this offense, and we don't quite know how targets will be distributed. It was already hard to predict. Now it literally became harder to predict in the first game together. That's at least a note for me, though, among all the teams that we are expecting to score a lot.
Doers, mowing season is here. With Spring Black Friday savings at the Home Depot. Right now, you can get gas-like power with the Ryobi 40-volt push mower for just $329. With a runtime of nearly an hour, it's the perfect mower to tackle your half-acre lawn without a trip to the gas station. Just push and mow. Your grass won't wait, so buy it online and pick it up in-store to get out there sooner. Get gas-like power this spring with the Ryobi 40-volt push mower, just $329, during Spring Black Friday at the Home Depot. How doers get more done.
The longest field goal ever attempted is 76 yards. The longest field goal ever missed? Also 76 yards. Why bring this up? Because knowing your limits matters, both when you're kicking a field goal and when you gamble. Betting more than you're comfortable with is like trying a 70-yard field goal. It probably won't go well. So set a limit when you gamble and stick to it. Want more helpful tips like this? Go to KeepItFunOhio.com for games, quizzes, and lots of ways to keep your gambling from getting out of hand.
Hey there. Did you know Kroger always gives you savings and rewards on top of our lower than low prices? And when you download the Kroger app, you'll enjoy over $500 in savings every week with digital coupons. And don't forget fuel points to help you save up to $1 per gallon at the pump. Want to save even more? With a Boost membership, you'll get double fuel points and free delivery. So shop and save big at Kroger today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Savings may vary by state. Restrictions apply. See site for details.
What about your highest rostered player or your contrarian tournament dart, let's say? Someone you know you're going to be on no matter their roster percentages on Sunday.
Yeah, so I think this is difficult because this is kind of why I opened the show talking about where do we find our edges. And it, for me, some of the edges are simply like mismatched roster sit percentages. And I think this is generally going to be a more efficient slate, but I do think of all of the teams to stack or the teams to play, that both sides of the Bengals versus Baltimore game, which doesn't have a crazy implied total or crazy total, is going to be particularly popular. I would much rather play Joe Mixon, who I think will simply see the bulk of the work in a game that projects to be medium scoring, but not high scoring enough that you want to stack all the plays. And we know Joe Mixon has basically as high of a ceiling as any running back on this entire slate, because we're not, you know, maybe outside of Derrick Henry, right? Because we know he has that 20 carry, 4 or 5 catch type of ceiling. And I think he works as sort of negative leverage against that Lamar Jackson type of stack, which I think Lamar Jackson, his team has a 26.5 implied team total, but I think he'll still be one of the top 5 or 6 probably quarterbacks because he projects as a good median value. But I would rather play the Joe Mixon side and hope that the Bengals not even dominate, right? But they hold their own in terms of the actual score of this game. And if they hold their own, we know they have been one of the more run-heavy teams in the NFL when they are holding with the lead. So I think Joe Mixon, as a leverage off of Lamar Jackson, and just as a good play in general, Joe Mixon is not a bad play, but as a leverage off of what I think is already bad Lamar Jackson ownership, is probably one of my higher versus the field ownerships on my entire bill.
I do like it. I have some, well, I play in all the Vegas betting contests, and I will tell you, Bengals +7, Bengals +6.5 was one of my favorite bets this week. So
let's go.
I do like how that fits in. I've also, you know, since I know Rashad Bateman is making his rounds in the circles of DFS podcast and discussions, since he is only 3,400 and is without Sammy Watkins, I still like Marquise Brown in some run back spots, especially after we already talked about it. We knew Marquise Brown essentially, maybe he wasn't going to fail, but he was going to have his toughest contest to date since the Chargers, with their too high shell defense. That's why they have limited teams to the fewest 15 plus yard catches of any defense all year. That's what they do best, is stop exactly Marquise Brown's strengths. And so we were not worried about him last week, but now no one's going to be on him and everyone's going to want to play the tantalizing rookie as usual, because it's an unlimited ceiling. Like, we haven't seen it yet. And so everyone wants to chase what they don't see. Whereas, you know, if you just look at what you've seen for Marquise Brown, he was the wide receiver 7 in fantasy points per game. That's good enough for me. So I think Marquise Brown is a terrific run back if you want to go that direction. Lamar Jackson also came in last week as top 2 of the highest roster quarterbacks. And so he'll probably sneak under the radar as well. But we are expecting a slower pace game, like you said. And so that would be really good for Joe Mixon, who also had 24 touches to Chris Evans 6 until the team had a 27-0 lead in the fourth quarter. And then that's when they got Evans and Travion Williams involved more behind him. For me, I've already talked about Darrel Williams a lot just to get an exposure to that game in the least rostered way possible. I don't know where he fits in, and it's probably better on FanDuel. I think Chuba Hubbard's a pretty awesome play again. We know all of the injuries, and I've been on the news feed for what seems like every single time their injury report hits, and it's miserable. We've seen all the injuries for the Giants just in not having Kadarius Toney, Saquon Barkley, and Kenny Golladay this week. Also, Sterling Shepard set back on Thursday for Sterling Shepard. Questionable, probably out. Darius Slayton looks like he's good to go. But right now, even with Dante Pettis and Colin Johnson on the active roster, they are essentially the only wide receivers guaranteed to play. Evan Ingram also sounds like he re-aggravated his ankle injury that kept him out at the beginning of the year. So we don't know if he's going to play either. And so it's a good correlation spot for not only the Panthers defense, which is one of the top pass rushers in pressure rate created in the entire league, top 3, but also for Chuba Hubbard as well, who we've now seen has handled 45 of 51 backfield touches over the last 2 games without Rodney Smith. So overall, like, he's someone among all these high team totals that is absolutely going to get lost and has 20 touch, 100 yard, 2 or 3 touchdowns in his range of outcomes.
Yeah, I love that call, because I think the thing is, on this slate, with, like, really, it's Derrick Henry that you want to pay up for if you wanted to pay up for a running back, and then a bunch of, like, they're not bad players. They're all very incredible football players, but if we're comparing them to their peers, just pay down. Just pay down, or pay for, even if you don't pay down in terms of price, pay down in terms of ownership, right? I think there are 2 ways that you want to approach running back this week. If you're not playing Derrick Henry, it's play the cheapest guys you can play, or play the least popular guys you can play, because either way, you gain an edge on your opponents. Because if you are playing the cheap guys, maybe you're playing popular cheap guys, but you're playing popular cheap guys who let you get up to the most expensive wide receivers on the slate. Or if you play a little more expensive, but you play non-popular plays. And I think the Chuba Hubbard call is the exact type of call that we want to look for. Whereas his team, even if I don't have a ton of faith in the Panthers as an offense, as an entire team, I think they're a team in this week that could certainly go out and beat their opponents by 10, by 14. And we've seen nothing but Chuba Hubbard be, especially last week, you know, sans Rodney Smith, he's going to be their lead running back, also be their pass catching running back. So I love that call in terms of a pivot off of maybe a Darrel Williams, something like that, because I just think because he doesn't play in the super exciting games, he doesn't play in that Titans versus Chiefs game, he's going to go overlooked. So I love that call. I think he'll probably also be a very sneaky spot for me in tournaments.
Well, as you mentioned, it's just a week to get on those running backs who we know are in amazing spots, but they're just not on the high team total. So no one's going to play them since it really does seem like ownership this week is very condensed in the running back department, at least on the same five or six guys. Everyone's infatuated with Derrick Henry, of course, Daryl Henderson, Leonard Fournette as well. Daryl Williams, we talked about, even though I think he'll be low rostered. Miles Sanders is making the rounds. And so guys we know are in good spots, like Aaron Jones, like Cordarrelle Patterson, for instance, on DraftKings. And then like Damian Harris, too, and Chuba Hubbard. Like that's where we need to go, because we're not worried about their spots at all. And knowing that we're going to get them at less than 10%, that's actually like, how do we need to attack too, even if we are correlating with defenses or just one-off running backs, knowing that they are a response to the oversaturated players. What about your fade of the week?
Oh, man. Yeah, this is sort of going back to what I thought at the beginning of the show, where I think this is a slate where I think ownership is probably closer to accurate on this week than I think most weeks would generally be. But I don't want to call it a fade, but I think I will probably be going a lot of Robert Woods versus Cooper Kupp, because I think it's a very high leverage spot. Cooper Kupp has been dominant throughout the season, but it is still, I think what is really interesting, it's still been nothing more than a six-game sample, which is a very small sample. And Robert Woods, his target shares, Eric Scherer, are still over 20%. And it's not because I think he's going to get more volume than Cooper Kupp this week. I don't believe that is the case. But his price, you know, especially on FanDuel, he's like $6,600 on FanDuel. But on both sides, I think Robert Woods is one of the best value plays of the slate. Whereas by the time on DraftKings you're paying up for Cooper Kupp, you're 500 below Devontae Adams. So I would love to do a Devontae Adams, Robert Woods, Matthew Stafford versus going down to a Cooper Kupp, Matthew Stafford, and whoever you would pay down versus Devontae Adams. I think the differential between Cooper Kupp and Robert Woods, it matters. You would rather, all else being equal, play Cooper Kupp. He gets more volume. He gets targeted in the red zone. But I don't think in terms of both the pricing and the ownership, which will both, I mean, the pricing says Cooper Kupp is obviously the better play, and the ownership will also say Cooper Kupp is the better play. I think Robert Woods is closer than both the pricing and the ownership indicate. And I think Cooper Kupp is like the ideal tournament pivot on this week.
Interesting. I like it a lot. Would you play, like you mentioned, Robert Woods with Daryl Henderson? Because that's kind of what I'm looking at too. I'm just trying to see which double stacks without the quarterback. Godwin, O.J. Howard, Godwin, Leonard Fournette, Henderson, Robert Woods, Henderson, Higbee. Again, Johnny Munt out for the year now. Last week we saw Tyler Higbee play every single snap. Ran just two fewer routes, 32 on Matthew Stafford's full dropbacks, 34, and probably would have stayed in if it was a competitive game. And so like, that's kind of how I was looking to build around and away from Cooper Kupp too.
Yeah, that's something I was really thinking about. Not quite the, I was actually thinking about a different way. You were talking about, would you play Daryl Henderson, Robert Woods without Matthew Stafford? I was thinking, would you use the running back as part of the stack in specific circumstances? Especially, I was thinking both Stafford, Rodgers even, and Patrick Mahomes, because we know the top running back for all those teams that we want to stack with them has a very real potential to catch one, if not two. What didn't like Aaron Jones have like a 3 receiving touchdown game a few weeks ago? You know, we have these running backs who, sure, their correlation with the quarterback is not as high for, like, I would imagine Mecole Hardman's R squared fantasy points with Patrick Mahomes is higher. But this is not a slate in which we want to play it as if it is a normal 13-game slate. It is a much smaller slate, and it is a bifurcated slate where, like, am I stacking the Bears, the Texans, the Jets, the Lions? I know there are...
Not to cut you off, but I've genuinely been looking at it this week as I'm stacking offenses. I'm not stacking games.
Yes, exactly.
I'm trying to get the touchdown equity in this slate. Yep. I'm not trying to get the high scoring game.
So that's why I'm asking. I normally really wouldn't consider stacking Patrick Mahomes and Daryl Williams, because I think Daryl Williams, his ideal scenario is 24 carries, 108 yards and a touchdown. And sure, he catches for one touchdown, but his 22 carries are not ideal for Mahomes. You want those to all be Mahomes targets. But I think this is a slate because I think there are like legitimately eight, maybe eight offenses that you actually even remotely consider stacking, that you're fine with a little bit of that Darrell Williams ceiling eating into the Patrick Mahomes ceiling because you want the Chiefs to score 45 points and you just capture all of them. Whereas on a normal slate, you actually, you know, if you only capture 45 points of the Chiefs, but four of them are Mahomes touchdowns and none of them are Darrell Williams, that doesn't work for you. There will be some other random, you know, Devontae Booker scores a touchdown, that type of slate, whatever. I think this is a slate exactly what you're talking about. I am less concerned with the negative ceiling correlation of, you know, a Tom Brady, Leonard Fournette, Chris Godwin lineup than I am on any other slate, specifically because there are so few offenses that I think are worth actually attacking that I'm not stacking quarterback, receiver, tight end, quarterback, receiver, receiver. I'm stacking offense, 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 exactly as you said. So this is one of the few slates that I think when I'm building lineups, I will actually include running backs as a legitimate part of the stack. Outside of, I don't think you gain a ton of equity by stacking Ryan Tannehill and Derrick Henry, but Darrell Williams has a decent amount of pass catching volume. The same with Darrell Henderson, the same with Aaron Jones, Leonard Fournette. So outside of the sort of rare, you know, 90th percentile only rushing between the tackles cases, I want to stack offenses this week. I don't want to stack, you know, passing attacks specifically.
Yeah, because Fournette has seen at least five targets and five and six targets, let's say, in his past two games. Mm-hmm. We also know he's handled 44 of 66 backfield touches in that span, and that's with Gio Bernard back. So you could do that with Tom Brady if you want to. Also, the Bucs, it's interesting because we know they lead the league in pass play rate with the lead. And so they could take a big lead and just keep on passing the ball. And you just get all the touchdown equity if Fournette is involved no matter what. Also, to your point on Tannehill, I just want to add, though, with Derrick Henry, we saw last week Jeremy Nichols had a setback in pregame warmups. And that's why I got onto Derrick Henry and showdown slate, because I knew Mekhi Sargent was out. I don't expect anyone else to know Mekhi Sargent is out, but I knew Mekhi Sargent was out, and I knew Darrington Evans was still on IR. So I was like, wait, that just leaves Kari Blasingame, their fullback, as the only other available option. Derrick Henry's going to get all the touches. Derrick Henry did get all the touches. And so if we do get a game again where like Mick Nichols is out and they only have Blasingame behind him, I would think Derrick Henry gets all the touches again. And so I would play. That's when I would stop fading Derrick Henry, and I would try to get contrarian around him, like, for instance, Ryan Tannehill hopefully throwing a few screenplays to him and just playing them together, maybe even, probably even, without two wide receivers, just playing Tannehill and Derrick Henry and hoping for the best there. So, yeah, that's the way I've been looking at it as well. Are there any other cheap options? Because my fade is pretty much Rashad Bateman. I think he's gained so much steam. He's a terrific cash game play, don't get me wrong. But knowing what we already talked about Marquise Brown, like, that's the play to roster for sure. Are there any other cheap options you've heard about throughout the week that you are not going to play knowing that they're going to get steamed by Sunday?
Yeah, I wouldn't say the Bengals players are cheap options, but I do think, given how like hot, you know, Jamar Chase 6,200 is not cheap by any means, you know, neither Tyler Boyd and T. Higgins. But I do think we've seen this team choose this year to play particularly run heavy. As of last year, they were the most pass heavy team in the NFL by some metrics, especially when you adjust for their game script. And I think not only because I love Joe Mixon, but because I think Jamar Chase will be one of the more popular plays, as well as Tegan's Tyler Boyd garnering some ownership, I think they'll come in as not like, you know, punt plays, right? That you take some cost to roster them, but I would rather roster Joe Mixon than any single one of the Cincinnati Bengals pass catchers.
That makes sense. And that's why initially I was looking at it as, you said Joe Mixon, I like Joe Mixon, and I was initially looking at Jamar Chase and Marquise Brown. I still think it's a good skinny stack option, especially because Joe Burrow has murdered the blitz this year. 10.5 yards per attempt, 6 touchdowns, no picks. And we know that Wink Martindale has sent the league's fourth most blitzes, the fourth highest blitz rate in the league. And so I think Burrow can have success. But we're also fresh off a game where Mixon, you know, played 3.5 quarters and he had a season high 20% target share. So also why he's a good option. What about some sneaky snack stack ideas on your end?
Do you think Ryan Tannehill will at any, like, do you think, what would you, I guess, what would you project the roster percentage for Ryan Tannehill to be? That is, that will determine if I am, quote, sneaky stacking Ryan Tannehill or not. Because I think ideally in this spot, you know, in 2016, Ryan Tannehill in this spot is like 1.2% ownership, right? And AJ Brown comes in as 5%, and you can double stack Ryan Tannehill with reckless abandon. But like, I think the field is getting sharper and sharper, and that's, it, you know, it almost reverts back to the decision point. How do you play this game? If Ryan Tannehill is at or less than 5%, I play Ryan Tannehill. It feels very obvious to me. If he comes in as 8 or 9%, I think that's about you know, the equilibrium point. So I want to play Ryan Tannehill, and I only will base it on what his ownership is. And I think that's how you should optimally play DFS. Where do you think Ryan Tannehill comes in at?
I'm looking at our friends at ETR right now. Adam Levitan, who I will text from time to time, yell at him about a projection because I think it's wrong. He has Tannehill at 4.3%. And I don't think that's wrong at all. I think that's about right. This is, of course, DraftKings projection, because Tannehill's underpriced on DraftKings, whereas it's a little harder to fit. Well, not fit, but it's a little harder to get there on FanDuel, knowing it's more of a pick'em at quarterback, even though touchdowns can make up for your lineup choosing mistakes on FanDuel, since touchdowns are volatile and random. That's really all you need on FanDuel. But overall, yeah, 4.3%. And I'm very interested in that number. Having said that, we also know, both from ETR projections and just off the top of our heads seeing it all, that AJ Brown is going to be the highest rostered receiver. So if that's what it looks like on Sunday, I still think you would need to play Julio Jones, or Julio Jones and AJ Brown, as opposed to only AJ Brown.
Yeah, I like that call. Another one I guess I'll throw out is just Aaron Rodgers. I think the tier ranking of quarterbacks goes this week: Patrick Mahomes on a tier of his own. I think will be one of the, maybe the most popular quarterback play of the entire season. I wouldn't be shocked if he has the highest ownership of any quarterback, because he's in the
Mahomes.
Yes, Mahomes.
Okay. I thought you meant Aaron Rodgers. I was like, wait.
Oh, sorry. I probably misspoke in trying to tee up the Aaron Rodgers play. Mahomes, I think, will be the most popular quarterback of the entire season, I would imagine. I mean, it's the highest game total of the season. His team doesn't really seem to care to run the football too much. It's obvious. It's him. And then I think after that, Matthew Stafford as one of the higher implied team totals. I think lost in the shuffle, as we talk about, as maybe a few points projected behind Stafford, behind Mahomes, will come Aaron Rodgers, and he has the best receiver play of the slate. I still think, you know, you have to project Davante Adams with his absolutely massive target share, his incredible role in the red zone as the number one receiver of the slate. Cooper Kupp is kind of making it as an argument, but I still don't want to put Cooper Kupp as my wide receiver one on a given week. If you're going to have the most popular wide receiver play of the entire slate, why are people not stacking him with his quarterback? There is only one avenue for Davante Adams to absolutely go nuts, and it's 170 yards and 2 touchdowns. So I think because of that, you already have guaranteed yourself a lot of Aaron Rodgers production. I think playing that stack is at least a bit sneaky. I'm not saying it's a lock, but I think it's something I'll probably be over the field on.
No one will play Terry McLaurin. I don't have him right now in my pool of players, but if someone said play him, I'm not egregious at all. Don't mind it. Last week, even though he was that downgrade and questionable on Friday after DNP, still ran around on 97.5% of Heineke's dropbacks. It's just that, you know, Heineke hit a little bit of a wall there. That's why everyone, though, will probably be off the Washington side, but they're still very good plays. We already talked about RSJ's salary on DraftKings in particular. JD McKissick, I still think, is actually a pretty sneaky play here, if we're assuming Gibson is limited and going to still have 12 to 16 touches in this game and another slate that everyone's going to be off of him. And so, yeah, those are my Davante Adams run backs if you're trying to play that game as well. Davante Adams, of course, after a season low, 5 targets, it's just a nut spot for him. I would imagine he's still going to be rostered.
Yeah.
But if for whatever reason, like, everyone's going to go Tyreek Hill or Davante Adams, no matter their salary, like, I'd put them in a vacuum just for sure and just let them battle it out, because it's, you can't even guess, like, 49-51 in both directions, one beats the other this week. So I'll gladly just take whichever one less of the field is off of. I also like, and I want to get your spin on this game after this. I kind of like Miles Sanders and Eagles defense corollary. After that high for the Raiders, knowing that Darren Waller, and rightfully so probably, is going to be heavily rostered. We've seen in the past, though, whether it was his breakout year under Gruden, whether it was last year, basically the first 8-10 games before he emerged over the last portion of the season, Darren Waller disappears. He just goes away from time to time. He is like Tyler Lockett of tight ends. He's a very streaky player who smashes and then disappears. And maybe this is just one of those streaks. And if that's the case, then I think the leverage off of this and then against the emotional high that the Raiders had last week in attacking man coverage or the Broncos successfully, Derek Carr, 4 of 6 pass attempts, 20-plus yards downfield hitting them, including Henry Ruggs for 2 40-plus yard bombs, would be the Eagles' defense because it's now a bad spot, in my opinion, for the Raiders' defense. Derek Carr has historically struggled against two-eye safeties and cover three zone coverage, and that's exactly what the Eagles have run. Their highest scheme, 29% of their defensive plays, have come from cover three. Derek Carr, of course, just 5.3 yards per attempt against cover three this year. So I do actually like Miles Sanders correlating with Eagles' defense as a way to combat Darren Waller, but Jalen Hurts is also going to be rostered in this game. I think it's a sneaky spot for Dallas Goedert because at this salary for Goddard, on both sides, FanDuel and DraftKings, you want to assume if you play him, if you can get there, you want to assume that he is a player that's going to cost $1,500 more because like he's an elite talent now finally as the solo tight end, the same role that Zach Ertz played 88% of the snaps with just last week. And so if Dallas Goedert's in that role, who's an elite talent, like you want, this is, you could make a case that this is arguably the cheapest he'll be the rest of the year, which is why you would play him. So what are your thoughts on that game in particular?
Yeah, I love that way of framing any individual player, but I think it fits perfectly for Dallas Goedert, is that this is the cheapest you will find Dallas Goedert probably for at minimum the next 3 to 4 weeks, because up until this point, he has been a hyper-efficient and well-underutilized tight end because he continues to split snaps with Zach Ertz, who sees, 6 or less yards per target, where Dallas Goedert can conditionally put up 10-plus yards per target, and now you put him in a full-time role where his competition for targets is essentially the running backs and Devonta Smith. That is good, but when you think about the context of the NFL, who is, the Mecole Hardman would be his sort of corollary on the Chiefs. His competition is Tyreek Hill and Travis Kelce. Running backs and a rookie wide receiver is not stiff competition for targets. It is very weak competition for targets. The second and third wide receiver for the Philadelphia Eagles is Jalen Reagor, a complete flop of a first-round pick, and Quez Watkins, who couldn't even in his rookie year beat out Craig Ward. I think Dallas Goedert is probably easily a sort of cash play at tight end, yet I don't think he gets quite steamed in terms of ownership like that, because as you said, I think it's quite obvious that with the overall body of work that Darren Waller has shown us, blow-up spots are coming. That's just going to happen with him. He is not Travis Kelce, so he's not going to put up a floor of 10, PPR points a week, but he's just below that. So when he puts up, 5, 8, 12, 15, those type of totals in 3 weeks, you just continue to buy the dip when his DraftKings price drops. But everyone sees that now. It's 2021 in DFS. People see that now. So I love going with some of the more mid to pay down type of prices with Dallas Goedert, both over Darren Waller and over Travis Kelce, who to me, I'm just playing Tyreek Hill over Travis Kelce every week. But I actually, more than Miles Sanders, who I get the thesis of the play, would rather play Dallas Goedert as just, I think, one of the better, if not maybe the best value play at tight end this week.
Now that we talk about it aloud, I think you're right. I think I just came to grips with that Dallas Goedert and Eagles defense is amazing play just because, no one's going to get there mentally with Dallas Goedert either because they want to play Darren Waller. That's the play that makes sense. But if we're seeing Dallas Goedert have 14 yards a catch and 11 yards a target on 68% of the snaps, now we put him in a full-time role, 90% of the snaps, and let's see what happens. Even if it's in garbage time, let's see what happens. And so, that actually does make sense as an amazing tournament play as leverage off Waller. So I like that a lot.
Doers, mowing season is here with Spring Black Friday Savings at the Home Depot. Right now, you can get gas-like power with the Ryobi 40-volt push mower for just $329. With a runtime of nearly an hour, it's the perfect mower to tackle your half-acre lawn without a trip to the gas station. Just push and mow. Your grass won't wait, so buy it online and pick it up in-store to get out there sooner.
Get Gaslight power this spring with the Ryobi 40-volt push mower just $329 during Spring Black Friday at the Home Depot. How doers get more done.
The longest field goal ever attempted is 76 yards. The longest field goal ever missed? Also 76 yards. Why bring this up? Because knowing your limits matters, both when you're kicking a field goal and when you gamble. Betting more than you're comfortable with is like trying a 70-yard field goal. It probably won't go well. So set a limit when you gamble and stick to it. Want more helpful tips like this? Go to keepitfunohio.com for games, quizzes, and lots of ways to keep your gambling from getting out of hand.
Time for a quick break to talk about McDonald's. Mornings are for mixing and matching at McDonald's. For just $3, mix and match two of your favorite breakfast items, including a sausage McMuffin, sausage biscuit, sausage burrito, and hash browns. Make it even better with a delicious medium iced coffee. With McDonald's mix and match, you can't go wrong. Price and participation may vary. Cannot be combined with any other offer or combo meal. Single item at regular price.
Let's go ahead and move on to the final segment of the show. Loose Notes is what I've been told, reminded that it was called. And so let's just scatterbrain here, because it should be, I came into Monday thinking I can't afford all these high price plays because I'm going to play Justin Fields at the cheapest he's ever been. But then you look at the numbers and you think about it against the Bucs, who of course are facing a league high 41.8 pass attempts per game. Justin Fields in college, Justin Fields in the NFL, absolutely horrific against the blitz. And what do we know Todd Bowles does? Blitz at the league's highest rate. Justin Fields, 5.5 yards per attempt this year. No touchdowns against the blitz. I am absolutely worried. And thus, that's why I think it's a good position, as we talked about earlier, to get there with Fournette, Chris Godwin, Fournette Evans, Fournette O.J. Howard, another sneaky cheap tight end, if you want to go that direction, especially if RSJ gets steamed on DraftKings, and then not play any Bears. As opposed to trying to get on Justin Fields, unless you can convince me to pay down at quarterback.
No, I wouldn't play Justin Fields. I heard you and Rich talk about this in the Road Rider show. And I the way that Tampa Bay plays defense matches up part. Like, you want to almost go Justin Fields into dropping back the way he takes sacks. And that is not just something that has happened this year, but it's something that I thought was his Achilles heel coming out of college. And the stats showed this, that he's a good passer. I want to, and I do believe in my heart of hearts, that within 2 or 3 years, he will be a gifted passer, being able to find receivers, streaking downfield, scoring touchdowns. But as of right now, his flaw, which was his flaw in college as taking sacks and not understanding how to evade pressure, has been nothing but true. And that's exactly, as you said, how the Bucs want to and will attack him. So no, I don't think that comes in as a good value play. To me, I find the Miami Dolphins versus Atlanta Falcons, two teams that are so, like, I have no interest.
Let's
in
talk about it, because this is in Loose Notes. So I want to touch on this game, because if I paid down at quarterback, it would be Tua. So I want to hear your thoughts.
Yeah, this game to me as a football fan has no real, exciting appeal. It's Matt Ryan versus Tua Tagovailoa. Tagovailoa's stats are almost, identically. I think as of before last week, they're actually identical to what, maybe in this last week, were identical to what they were last year. He is a distributor of the football. That's not that exciting, but the game has a pretty reasonable total. It's not, it's not incredibly far off, especially when you adjust for the salary at 47.5 from, a game like the Eagles versus the Raiders, 48.5. It's 1 point different, yet I think the Eagles versus Raiders will be much more popular. But we know that on both sides, especially for the Falcons, the Falcons have four players you can reasonably target on their team. It's two running backs. This Cordarrelle Patterson thing is crazy. Congrats to Cordarrelle Patterson, though, for finally figuring out.
I'm not playing Mike Davis, by the way.
I'm not playing either of the running backs. But in terms of the passing game, it is literally Patterson. It is Kyle Pitts, it is Calvin Ridley, both of whom are underperforming their overall volume. And the game has a reasonably high implied team total. And we know the Miami Dolphins defense is not exactly up to par to what they thought we would be this year. I mean, if you knew anything about regression, you would say they wouldn't be as good as they were last year. But even forgetting about that, they're playing far worse than they were last year. So I think this game is interesting at a minimum for one-offs. I can't really imagine myself stacking it, because neither of the quarterbacks I can really see putting up 35, 40 even, whereas there are many quarterbacks on the slate I can. But I do think this is a game I actually want to find a lot of correlation in. A Jalen Waddle, Calvin Ridley mini stack, I think is it's going to be like almost a core piece of my lineups.
Okay, well, let's move on to this one real quick, actually. Among all the injuries, let's say it shakes out as we think it's going to shake out. Would you play one of the Giants' cheap receivers or like a Tyler Johnson, let's say, to help fit some more expensive pieces, or would you be off of them? I would be tempted. This is just my two cents. I would be tempted to play Sterling Shepard if he's active and bring back Hubbard if I get there. But I'm curious on your thoughts.
Oh, yeah. I mean, if Sterling Shepard is active, I would he's going to see 14 targets. Like, we saw this when he actually played with other receivers early in the season. I mean, it's not like anything incredible, but he was playing with, you know, Darius Slayton or whatever. He's playing with Kenny Golladay, and he was seeing double-digit targets weekly. Now you take, like, his competition for targets will be Colin Johnson and Dante Pettis. Dante Pettis, I cannot stress this enough, that if Sterling Shepard were to be active, I don't care if he's at 12% of normal Sterling Shepard health. He would see a ton of targets. And the thing is, he's not a player we need his quote athleticism for him to really thrive. He's a guy who gets open, gets targets, and if he falls down, that's fine. He goes for, you know, 7 for 90 or whatever. So I actually think if Sterling Shepard were to be active, he would be a really good play. Just one last note, I can't help but bring up that Kyle Pitts leads all. Not, you know, he's not top five. Technically he is. He's not just top five, though. He's not just top 10. He is number one in air yard share among tight ends. He is, among all tight ends, the guy that his team goes to when they want to move the sticks. We have been, up until, you know, his London game, disappointed by Kyle Pitts, but his volume has consistently been there. And Calvin Ridley is essentially the same argument. So I love both of those Falcons. I will call them alpha receivers, even if they haven't produced, you know, top three numbers at their position.
Between Jalen Waddle, Mike Gesicki, and Devontae Parker, assuming we get all, which two would you stack with Tua? Or would you go, would you just run back one and go the Falcons double stack?
I guess... Oh, man, I don't think I really want to stack. I don't want to play either of the quarterbacks, but I'm perfectly fine running a lot of the receivers. And I think Kyle Pitts, out of all of them, would be my favorite play, which means I'm probably not playing double tight end. So Mike Gesicki gets ruled out. It's probably Kyle Pitts and Jalen Waddle, who was still seeing nearly 8 targets per game when Devontae Parker was healthy. And I think if I had to project them for a similar target volume, I would just take Jalen Waddle, who at this point I think is probably a more efficient player than Devontae Parker, given his skill set.
What is your, among the double stacks without quarterbacks that we talked about with the four teams that have 30 plus point team totals in the Rams, Cardinals, Chiefs, and Bucks, what is your favorite double stack without the quarterback? I think I like Hopkins and James Conner. Build the lead and then pad the lead with the guys in your lineup. Also Fournette and Godwin, even though I think that's going to be pretty popular. Yeah. Then Henderson and someone other than Cooper Kupp, like you talked about earlier.
Yeah, I was hoping we include running backs because mine would be Henderson and Robert Woods. I mean, Henderson has just run circles around Sony Michel. There is not a 1A, 1B. There is not a committee going on in Los Angeles. It is just Darrell Henderson, who's averaging like 100 yards per game. He has scored a touchdown on all but one of his active games this year. I think it's very clear that he is not only the team's number one running back, but he is almost the entirety of their backfield unless they end up winning by 30 plus, at which point you've probably already secured your touchdown. So I will say, of those, even if you had named other teams, you named three teams, I would say the Henderson Woods would actually be my number one.
And also, it doesn't help, like, on DraftKings, Henderson's just not getting moved. I mean, 6,600, 6,300? I think.
Yeah, they're not moving him up. He's like,
6,600 is not enough for his workload. Like, Sony Michel just does not get touches when Henderson's available. So, I mean, we saw last week even, Henderson flexed out to a wide receiver and caught a touchdown as well as a rushing score. So, it should be more. Like, FanDuel, for instance, moved Henderson up to 8K. Of course, they also moved up Cordarrelle Patterson to 8K. And Cordarrelle Patterson wasn't playing like a $6,300 player, let alone an 8K player. So easy to get off Patterson there. I could see playing Patterson on DraftKings, though. I know you said you don't like it, but I still don't really mind it, even though, of course, I'm not expecting, you know, 21 touches that he got without Calvin Ridley before their bye. With that is all I have on my end. Anything else you would like to say before we get out of here?
No, I think you briefly brought it up, but I talked about stacking Aaron Rodgers. Terry McLaurin come back. Like Terry McLaurin at some
Aaron point. Aaron Jones, Terry McLaurin, or like Aaron Jones, Aaron Rodgers?
Anything with Terry McLaurin. Honestly, I think actually you can play Aaron Jones. You can play Davante Adams. I will be stacking Aaron Rodgers. But you briefly brought up the excellence that is Terry McLaurin. At some point, you know, when his competition, I like De'Ami Brown. I promise to the Dynasty heads, I like De'Ami Brown. But when his competition is De'Ami Brown, Adam Humphries, and backup tight end to a converted quarterback tight end, Logan Thomas, Terry McLaurin seeing, you know, top three deep targets in the NFL. I love that stack with Terry McLaurin. Any way you want to run back the Packers.
Don't hate it at all. With that being said, he is Kyle Dvorak at Kyle Tweets here on Twitter. I am John Daigle at Not Jay Daigle. Good luck this week. Again, it's a tough one, but we're all going to get through it. And hopefully we are back here Friday, 6 p.m. Eastern, hearing about yours and ours big wins. So with that, thanks again for tuning in, everyone. We will see you next week. Good luck.
With Spring Black Friday deals at the Home Depot, you can give your lawn or garden beds a pop of color and protection. Right now, get a special buy on Scott's Earth Grow Mulch, 5 bags for just $10. Help your soil retain moisture longer with color that lasts up to 12 months. Shop Spring Black Friday deals for a special buy on Scott's Earth Grow Mulch, 5 bags for just $10 at the Home Depot. How doers get more done. Color selection varies by store. Limit 60 bags per customer while supplies last.
The longest field goal ever attempted is 76 yards. The longest field goal ever missed? Also 76 yards. Why bring this up? Because knowing your limits matters, both when you're kicking a field goal and when you gamble. Betting more than you're comfortable with is like trying a 70-yard field goal. It probably won't go well. So set a limit when you gamble and stick to it. Want more helpful tips like this? Go to keepitfunohio.com for games, quizzes, and lots of ways to keep your gambling from getting out of hand.